Discourse on the End of the Revolution and the Beginning of Independence by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 4, The Courts. Salem, Massachusetts, August 20th, 1774. On Saturday, August 20th, the Salem, the provincial capital, committee, not the town selectmen, as was normally the case, posted notices calling for the people of the town. Quote, "The Committee of Correspondence desires the merchants, freeholders, and other inhabitants of this town to meet at the town chamber next Wednesday at 9 o'clock in the morning to appoint 5 or more deputies to meet at Ipswich on the 6th of September next, with the deputies which shall be appointed by the other towns in this county, to consider of and determine on such measures as the late Acts of Parliament and our other grievances render necessary and expedient." Close quote. On Tuesday, the day before the meeting, Governor Gage issued a proclamation. "Whereas, by the late Act of Parliament, all town meetings called without the consent of the governor, except the annual meeting in the months of March and May, are illegal, I do hereby strictly prohibit all persons from attending any meeting not warranted by law, as they will be chargeable with all that the consequences that may follow thereon, and answer at the same at their utmost peril." General Gage, anticipating disobedience to his proclamation, went to Salem with 2 companies of the 59th Regiment, who stopped at the entrance to town and loaded their guns. The soldiers then continued to the courthouse, equipped as if for battle. Gage then summoned the leaders of the Salem Committee to meet with them at 9 o'clock, the same time as the committee meeting. They thought that, absent leadership, the committee meeting would be to no avail. The Patriots outsmarted General Gage, and though the leaders attended the meeting with Gage, the committee went about its business and selected 6 representatives to the county convention. General Gage retaliated by ordering Judge Peter Fry to issue warrants for the committee members who had called the meeting, charging them with seditiously and unlawfully causing the town to be assembled by those notifications without leave from the government, in contempt of the laws, and against the peace and the late statute. The first patriots brought into custody posted bail, but the next 5 refused, defiantly telling General Gage, if the 90th part of a farthing would be taken as bail, they would not give it. They then responded to the governor's threat. If he committed them, then he must abide by the consequences. As reported by John Andrews, there was upwards of 3,000 men assembled there from the adjacent towns with full determination to rescue the committee if they should be sent to prison, even if they were obliged to repel force with force, being sufficiently provided for such a purpose, as indeed they were all through the county, every male above the age of 16 possessing a firelock with double the quantity of powder and ball enjoined by law. So here, nearly 8 months before the bloody showdown at Lexington Green, patriots stood armed against the British soldiers, testing the resolve of each side. Springfield, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. On Friday, August 26th, delegates from the 25 towns in Hampshire County assembled in Hadley, home of the 130-foot Liberty Pole. Their options included petitioning the judges to adjourn, disrupting the court physically, or trying to convince the judges to meet under the authority of the old charter instead under the Massachusetts Government Act. They decided to ask the judges themselves under what authority did they hold their offices. By Monday, August 29th, the judges, justices of the peace, of lawyers, and various officials with business before the court had arrived in Springfield. Early Thursday morning, they heard the tolling of the West Springfield bell, the signal for patriots to gather. Between 2,000 and 4,000 men, carrying staves, mustered about the courthouse, where they hoisted a black flag to threaten the judges away. The judges and justices bypassed the courthouse and convened at a public house nearby, where they received a committee of delegates from the demonstrators. The delegates asked them how did they hold their authority, by the charter or by the act. The judges responded, "We consider and judge ourselves to hold our offices by virtue and force of the charter." They then claimed that the late Act of Parliament had not made a significant alteration in their authority. The delegates took the justices' reply outside, where it was read 3 times to the people assembled. The people talked, discussed, debated, and finally concluded by a vote that the answer was not satisfactory. They then decided that the court would not sit. The delegates returned to the justices and told them they would not sit, contrary to the minds of the people. The justices signed a petition, to wit, "We, the subscribers, do severally promise and solemnly engage to all people now assembled in the county of Hampshire on the 30th day of August, 1774, that we will never take, hold, execute, or exercise any commission, office, or employment whatsoever under or in virtue of, or in any manner derived from any authority, or pretended or attempted to be given by the late Act of Parliament entitled, An Act for the Better Regulating of the Government of the Province of Massachusetts Bay in New England." The petition was signed by 18 judges and justices. Concord, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. On August 30th, over 150 delegates from every town and district of Middlesex County gathered at Concord to consult on the measures to be taken. First, the Massachusetts Government Act was read in its entirety. The convention then chose 9 members to draft an appropriate response. It reads in part, quote, "It is evident to every attentive mind that this province is in a very dangerous and alarming situation. We are obliged to say, however painful it may be to us, that the question now is whether, by a submission to some late acts of Parliament of Great Britain, we are contented to be the most abject slaves and entail that slavery on our posterity after us, or by a manly, joint, and virtuous opposition and support of our freedom. There is a mode of conduct which in our very critical circumstances we would wish to adopt, a conduct, on the one hand, never to tamely submit to tyranny and oppression, on the other, never degenerating into rage, passion, and confusion. This is a spirit which we revere, as we find it exhibited in former ages, and will command applause to the latest posterity." The report continued, providing instructions not to recognize any aspect of the Massachusetts Government Act, to continue to conduct local business as has always been done, and all acts by the people must be justified by God and the world. The stage was set for the September 13th court opening. Worcester, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. In preparation for dealing with the court closure, 130 men attended the Worcester Convention. The next morning, in what can be described as a democratically spirited proceeding, the following was approved. Quote, "Voted that every person who speaks in this meeting shall rise up, and after he is done speaking shall sit down, and not speak more than twice on the same subject, without obtaining leave, and shall not speak irreverently." Their first resolution stated their purpose, "That it is indispensable duty of the inhabitants of this county, by the best ways and means, to prevent the sitting of their respective courts." They then recommended to the inhabitants of this county to attend in person any court sessions and to maintain order, and then recommended to the several towns that they choose proper and suitable officers and a sufficient number to regulate the movements of each town and prevent any disorder which might otherwise happen. they were determined not to be perceived as a mob. Since the ordinary course of justice may be stayed, they encouraged that each individual should pay his just debts and as soon as may be possible, without any disputes or litigation. The final point addressed was in anticipation of what had been threatened previously by General Gage, that whereas it is generally expected that the governor will send one or more regiments to enforce the execution of the Acts of Parliament on the 6th of September, that it is recommended to the inhabitants of this county, if there is intelligence, that the troops are on the march to Worcester to attend properly armed in order to repel any hostile force which may be employed for that purpose. Concerned that only Worcester was to be protected, the delegate's final resolution read that if there is an invasion or danger of invasion in any town in this county, that such town as is invaded or being in danger thereof shall, by their committees of correspondence or some other proper person, send letters of express post immediately to the committees of the adjoining towns, who shall send to other committees in the towns adjoining them, that they will all come properly armed and accoutred to protect and defend the place invaded. Finally, they voted that it be recommended that each town of the county to retain in their own hands what monies may be due from them severally to the provincial treasury. Voted that each member will purchase at least 2 pounds of powder in addition to any he may have on hand, and will use all exertions to supply his neighbors fully. Voted that the members and delegates endeavor to ascertain what number of guns are deficient to arm the people in case of invasion. There is no doubt that the citizens of Worcester were prepared to defend their constitutional rights and their charter. There is also no doubt that General Gage was aware of what was happening in the countryside. On August 27th, he had written to Lord Dartmouth, "In Worcester they keep no terms, openly threaten resistance by arms, have been purchasing arms, preparing them, casting ball, and providing powder, and threaten to attack any troops who dare to oppose them. Mr. Ruggles of the new council is afraid to take his seat as judge of the inferior court, which sits at Worcester on the 7th of next month, and I apprehend that I shall soon be obliged to march a body of troops into that township, and perhaps into others, as occasion happens, to preserve the peace." Boston, Massachusetts, August 30th, 1774. General Gage attended the Superior Court of the Judiciary of Boston, Suffolk County, the only place that the court could be safely opened. As the Boston Gazette reported on September 5th, "Last Tuesday, being the day of the Superior Court was to be holden here, the Chief Justice, Peter Oliver, Esquire, and the other justices of said court, together with a number of gentlemen of the bar, attended by the high deputy sheriffs, walked in procession from the State House to the courthouse on Queen Street. When the court were seated and the usual proclamations made, a list of names of the gentlemen returned to serve as grand jurors was presented to them, and the court appointed Mr. Ebenezer Hancock foreman. However, when Ebenezer Hancock rose to be sworn in, he declined. The remaining 22 grand jurors also refused to take the oath. When asked why they refused to take the oath, they referred to previously prepared document which made the case that Peter Oliver, sitting as Chief Justice, was against the charter. The Superior Court continued to meet through Friday, conducting such business as is usually transacted without the juries. General Gage, at least, could show that some functions of government were still proceeding. On Wednesday, August 30th, General Gage tried to convince his council. 3 days later, Gage wrote to Dartmouth, "I ordered a council to assemble, but upon their representation that they should be watched, stopped, and insulted on the road to Salem, they desire to be assembled here in Boston." Only 15 of the original 36 attended. General Gage presented to them for their vote the pressing decision he had to make within a week. whether they would advise to the sending of any troops into the county of Worcester or any other county in the province for the protection of the judges and other officers of the courts of justice, whereupon several gentlemen of the council expressed their opinions that insomuch as the opposition to the execution of any part of the late acts of Parliament relating to this province was so general, they apprehended it would not be for His Majesty's service to send any troops into the interior parts of the province, but that the main body continue in the town of Boston, which might be strengthened by the addition of all other troops, to be improved as circumstances may occur, and be placed of safe retreat for those who may find it necessary to remove thither. On September 2nd, General Gage again wrote to Dartmouth, "I came here to Boston to attend the Superior Court, and the intention to send a body of troops to Worcester to protect the courts there. And if I wanted to send parties to the house of some of the councillors who dwell in that county, but I heard from undoubted authority that the flames of sedition have spread universally through the county beyond conception. The councillors already drove away, and that no courts could proceed on business. The council was of opinion that it was very improper to weaken the troops here by any detachments whatever, as they could not be of any use to the courts, as no jurors would appear, and by that means defeat the proceedings and the disturbance among so general and not confined to any particular spot. There was no knowing where to send them to be of use." This ends episode 4.